This podcast brought to you by Peterson Auto Group. With 5 stores and 10 brands and more than 1,800 new and used vehicles to choose from, Peterson Auto Group likely has your perfect car.
If you're talking about it,
they don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
In the next title studio, David Allen in for Paul J. Todd with 1D's here. Chris Walton is with me also. And Daniel Lipsitz joins us this morning. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having us.
Sure. You're an attorney with Cordell & Cordell.
That's correct.
And with Father's Day coming up this Sunday, I wanted to have you in and kind of discuss the perception versus the reality in divorce for fathers.
Okay.
So you guys obviously defend men in divorce cases. What's your outlook for that? Is it for fair and equality, or is it to get one up on somebody?
No, I think our goal at Cordell & Cordell is to make sure that men get a fair shake during the divorce process, especially related to custody, and ensure that fathers will continue to have a role, a significant role, in their children's lives. And we're not looking for anything more than an equal shake under the law.
I haven't looked into the current rules about men and women split up when they split up. What are the current trends that are going around the country and in Idaho?
Well, I think historically speaking, mother was getting a preferential treatment under the law. It wasn't necessarily discrimination, but it wasn't necessarily fair. I think that is trending in a more positive direction. There are some states that are even moving towards a presumption of equal custody rights for both men and women. Idaho is not quite there yet. There has been some discussion in the legislature that making equal custody sort of presumed under the law, but that hasn't passed yet. So right now we're trending towards sex not being an important factor, but it's still, I think, in the back of the judges' minds.
It's obviously Father's Day week. What tips would you give dads if they wanted to obtain proper custody and visitation and continued role in their kids' lives that's very important to them?
Yeah, I think most of the tips that I normally, and Cordell & Cordell normally recommends, mostly just common sense. You need to stay involved in your child's life. So do whatever you normally do. If they take dance classes, take them to dance class. During the summertime, if you normally take them camping, you take them camping. Take them to the pool. Stay actively involved. Do things with them. Make sure that they understand that you're there. Make sure that they understand that you love them, because obviously a divorce process for the children is one of the toughest things that they go through their life. And as long as they know that their father is supporting them, that's going to obviously help and be in your child's best interest. But it's also going to help you if there is any type of custody battle.
If someone had never heard of Cordell & Cordell and they got a divorce in the past, and they kind of feel like maybe the verdict they ended up with wasn't fair, is there something that you can do for them?
That's a great question, Chris. I think that it depends on what it is. If it's a property division that wasn't fair, there's not much we can do about that.
Right.
However, if it's a custody modification or child support, those type of items and issues are always modifiable, assuming there might be a change of circumstances from the last order. And that's definitely something we could look at and help you out with.
What's your impression or opinion on why? Because you're right, it's been a little one-sided in a lot of court cases, not just in Idaho, but around the country, where men get the short end of the stick. Why do you think that perception was within courts when you're looking at two people who both want 50% of custody or whatever, and the men always come out shorter? Why was that, do you think?
Well, I think Joe Cordell started the firm about 25 years ago, him and his wife in St. Louis, Missouri. And with Cordell & Cordell, he saw a need there, and that mothers were being assumed to be the proper parent, the better parent, and that fathers were typically the breadwinners, and that they weren't really either cared or weren't really involved in raising their children. I think it was just almost sort of a natural assumption by the judges at that point. And so when Mr. Cordell saw that need, he started pushing back against that and saying, no, fathers should have equal custody. Just because mothers were assumed at that point to be the primary caretakers, that's not necessarily what's going to happen after a divorce. It's a significant change in what's happening, and both parents should have an equal right to their children at that point.
Is there a significant difference in what could be the outcome, or what is the average outcome, depending upon what state you get divorced in?
I think there is, but that's also, again, trending to be sort of normalized. Mm-hmm. I think in some states are, like I said previously, there are some statutes that put a presumption of equal custody, and then it's on the burden of the other parent to prove why it shouldn't be equal custody. So I think it does make a small impact on where you get divorced. It probably makes a small impact on what judge you have in any particular state, because each judge has their, I wouldn't say bias, but their thoughts on things.
Where does Idaho sit for divorce settlements as opposed to the rest of the country?
Well, when it comes to custody, I think Idaho's moving along towards getting toward that presumption of equal custody, sort of depending on the age of the child. But I think we're lagging behind some states. We might be a little more progressive than others. But, you know, if you think of more of the progressive states, some of the western states, Colorado's pretty progressive when it comes to custody. And we're still a little, I think, conservative, moving behind some of those states.
Give everybody a chance, Daniel. How do they get a hold of you, either phone or email, or give that information out?
Well, they can contact us at 208-502-0000. That's our my phone number, and they can contact Cordell at Cordell. They can contact me at dlipsitz, which is dlipsitz at cordelllaw, cordelllaw.com.
Perfect. Thanks for coming in today and sharing this information. I hope someday that everyone just looks at it gender neutral and just goes, what's best for the child? Because at the end of the day, that's really has to be the answer, right?
Right, and that's what we're pushing for.
Fantastic.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming in this morning. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
8:45, time to get one last look at traffic this morning.
Back now to David and Chris.
Remember, you are listening to Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
David Allen, Chris Walton here with you. Welcome back to the show, 8:51. You said you had something there about toxic coworkers.
Actually, yes,
I do. As
I
look at Todd. For no reason at all, Todd. I'm serious.
Well, this is just a study that I found. It's actually in the New York Post this morning. It says, when Carrie, a 27-year-old account manager for a New York City PR firm, public relations, left her last job for a new gig in the city, it wasn't just a step up for her career. It may have saved her health. My direct supervisor, she says, at my old job, not only treated me like a personal assistant, but actually asked me to do his 10-year-old son's homework.
Wow.
Carrie asked not to use her last name for
Obviously,
professional reasons.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's the one that was on Sex and the City, in case you're wondering about
Carrie
in New York.
Yeah.
The stress that her colleagues' demands created led to many sleepless nights, as well as feeling constantly ill, and even caused her hair to begin to fall out.
Wow.
I felt like a constant sickness, says Carrie. I wouldn't sleep because I would wake up for hours from a nightmare about work, which led me to feel exhausted and sick the next day. Everything from chills to an overall feeling of exhaustion. I had handfuls of hair fall out every once in a while. A recent study tracked the impact caused by unreasonable demands within the workplace and found that not only can unkind coworkers and bosses make your job more difficult, but they can also have a negative impact on your health. The study, Targeted Workplace Incivility, The Roles of Belongingness, which I did not know until now was
no
a word,
idea.
Embarrassment and Power, from the University of Calgary's Haskane School of Business and London School of Economics and Political Science, found that workers have experienced physical symptoms such as headaches, stomach problems, and sleeplessness as a result of a colleague's bad behavior. When you have a conflict with someone at work and it's unresolved and it turns inside you and affects your day, your life outside of work, affects your sleep, all of these things can add up to and absolutely make a person completely sick. That's according to a clinical associate professor of psychiatry at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania, whose name is actually Jody Foster.
Yikes, okay.
You know, different.
Obviously not Jody Foster.
Exactly. And co-author of the Schmuck in My Office, How to Deal Effectively with Difficult People at Work.
You ever worked with anybody that's caused you grief or aggravation? I mean, other than me?
Loss of
hair, loss of sleep.
I don't know about loss of hair, but loss of sleep and things like that. And yeah, I mean, and the most egregious ones I can think of. There was one clear back in 1983. There was one in 1989. And no, you're not one of them. Believe me.
Dodged a bullet. I never have. I've been lucky. I understand that. I've been lucky. I've never, in the three states I've lived in, I've never had a terrible coworker. Maybe that's because I'm the worst coworker there is.
I think there are a lot of people who can relate to the story.
Oh,
though.
Certainly, yes.
In a study that I read sometime back about, 36%, it was more than a third, I know, of workers say they typically feel tense or stressed out when they're at work. Now, a lot of times it's just because what they're doing is important and they want
sure.
You know, and a lot of people are just concerned about getting things right.
Yeah.
There are conscientious people in the world. The best way to deal with toxic coworkers or a bad boss. Now, I don't necessarily know. Be as calm as possible, I would assume.
Yes.
But on the other hand, that could be the absolute wrong thing to do. I haven't read the study.
I tell you, when you get in a situation where things are out of your control,
mm-hmm.
you need to just realize that things are out of your control.
Yeah.
And not stress over things you can't do anything about.
That sounds like Satchel Paige. He says, ain't no sense worrying about stuff that you got no control over, because if you got no control over it, ain't no sense worrying.
No sense worrying about it.
And he says,
exactly.
ain't no sense about worrying about stuff you got control over, because if you got control over it, ain't no sense worrying.
Yeah.
I don't think he worried a lot.
And I know it seems simple, and it's easier said than done a lot. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in a situation where somebody's causing you aggravation at work and you can't control their actions or their attitude or anything, then why worry about it? If you can't fix them, how do you fix yourself?
And the one thing not to do, and I can tell you this from my entire life, is that if somebody is really, really, really getting under your skin, and one day you get very angry about it, people will they won't be the least bit sympathetic with you if you get too angry.
No,
they won't even bother to talk to the other person. They'll just wonder why you got so angry.
Yeah. And that's why,
like how in the NFL, if one guy shoves another guy and then the second guy shoves back, the second guy gets the penalty.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like that.
It's always like that. Yeah. Exactly. And that's why anger never solves anything.
Not so much.
And if you sit down and talk to the person and say, hey, you know what? You're next to impossible to work with. And we obviously butt heads. I will tell you, I had that.
I've never actually sat down and said that to somebody. I've just kind of put up with it as long as I had to.
I kind of had that in this building now that I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally sat down and said, I don't know why we don't get along. It doesn't make any sense. We both want the same thing. So let's start from scratch, get rid of all the stuff
right.
from the past 4 or 5 years, and let's move on from there. We get along great now.
Yeah.
We get along great because we were able to sit down and just...
And that's fantastic. I just
clear the air.
I can't really picture myself saying that to somebody.
Yeah. I mean, I like I say, I said it in a nice way because I wanted to work. I wanted to be able to work with this person because they're very important in the building. I'm semi-important in the building, and it's always better when everyone gets along. Then we all move forward and go from there. So
I'm also in the building.
And you are in the building, yes. Coming up after the news, we're either going to talk about something Trump-wide, which every day is that, or there's a new U.S. civil rights group worrying anti-Muslim sentiment is fueling right-wing extremism. We'll get that after the news on 670 KBOI.
If you're talking about it,
they don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
Welcome back to the show. David Allen in for Paul J. Chris Walton in studio with me.
Hello.
Hello. All right. I tease this. This is from abcnews.com. Civil rights groups are expressing concern that a wave of anti-Muslim sentiment is fueling the growth of right-wing extremism across the United States, citing dozens of anti-Sharia demonstrations across the U.S. this weekend and an ongoing uptick in online recruitment. Police in Seattle and St. Paul, Minnesota, made arrests after fighting broke out during a series of marches across the U.S. on Saturday against Sharia, a strict form of Islamic law. The marches, launched by Act for America, a self-described nonprofit national security organization, is run by vocal supporters of President Donald Trump. That has nothing to do with it, but anyway. Ibrahim Hooper, the National Communications Director for the Council on Anti-Islamic Relations,
mm-hmm.
which is CARE, told ABC News in a recent interview that the anti-Sharia rallies were being used by some neo-Nazi and white power groups to recruit new members. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. What I will tell you is I'm not a fan of Sharia law, and I will say that...
I will echo that. I am not either.
But I'm also not a fan of neo-Nazis or the KKK.
Okay.
So I'm against all of those kinds of groups.
Okay.
And
so what, I guess, what we would call extremism, no matter what direction
you're
going. Yes,
100% agree. I am against extremism because it's always dangerous. Extremism on any side is always dangerous. And I'm trying to think how I want to say this. Because as I've said on the show, and I'm glad there was no terrorism over the weekend, because every Monday it seems like that's what we end up talking about. I've talked about, you know, gathering up the people who are on the watch list. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I don't care what religion they are, and I don't care what color they are.
Mm-hmm.
Because Timothy McVeigh was a white Catholic or a white Christian, and he blew up the Mura building, the federal building, killed a lot of kids, so he was a bad human being, and I'm glad he's not on the planet anymore.
Okay.
So I'm against that. But I'm also against people who shoot up a Christmas party and they might be Muslim or Islamic. I'm against that, too.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with the color of their skin or their religion. It has everything to do with the level of violence they want to inflict on others.
Now, Sharia law is, of course, connected to Islam.
Yes.
All I would tell anybody who wants to follow Sharia law is that we don't do that in the United States. We follow U.S. law, and that you can follow a certain amount of Sharia law in your own household, but do not come outside and expect me to do it too, because this is America where you can do what you want.
100% agree.
And if the more harsh parts of Sharia law, I would say no, you can't even do those in the United States. Like, for instance, honor killings and things like that. You can't do any killings.
No,
killings are not good. Don't do those.
Don't do those.
Again, even if, like, for instance, Dearborn, Michigan has the highest percentage of Muslims in the entire country for any city of any size. And yet they will not be able to vote in Sharia law there simply because the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of Michigan will not allow it.
Yes. Hooper said, what we are seeing in America right now is the mainstreaming of hate.
Mm-hmm.
Extremists feel empowered now because they think they have the president on their side. Now, let me ask you a question.
I don't know. To me, that's a bit of an excuse, I think, for just bad behavior.
Yeah.
I don't think necessarily he's to blame. I don't think anybody necessarily is to blame. People tend to hate what they're afraid of. And I can understand why people might be afraid of somebody they think is going to, walk into a huge group of people and either start shooting or stabbing
or
blow themselves up or
whatever it might be. Yeah.
And definitely those particular people do need to be stopped from what they are doing.
Yeah. And I don't know anything. I mean, you can talk about the travel ban. You can talk about the wall. I don't know that any of that from Donald Trump can be construed unless you're already looking for something and you're a little twisted and demented in your neo-Nazi group. And you're going to say, that's telling me I got free rein.
Apart from, saying a couple of things at rallies like get those guys out of here or, punch that guy on the way out or something of that nature.
Yeah.
I don't think that the president ever actually expressly told people to, rise up against any particular group and commit violence upon them. I do not think that is something he said. And I'll say this for the benefit of Mr. Comey. I don't think he applied it or he intended to say it either.
I don't think so either.
No.
All right, 336-3700, 1-800-529-5264, #670 on your Verizon Wireless. Is there an increase in right-wing extremism, and can you tie a direct note from A to B with Donald Trump winning the presidency? I don't think so. Chris doesn't think so. Todd of 1D doesn't think so, even though we didn't ask him. 912 now at 670 KBOI. We'll take your calls next.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. and Chris. More local talk with Nate Shellman is live this afternoon at 3 on 670 KBOI.
918 now at 670 KBOI. KBOI rewards code extremism. 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 Go to KBOI.com, enter the keyword extremism, get your 5,000 rewards points, and a mask with a skull face on it.
No, and there are a lot of different levels of extremism. I mean, extremism might be just something you feel strongly about.
Sure. Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's when
However,
it gets out of hand.
Well, yeah, it's when it causes you to, I'll say, unnecessarily begin to kill people.
Yes.
That perhaps it has gotten out of hand.
Yes.
Dave of Boise says, I don't understand why President Trump is being grilled and investigated for being an American businessman. What billionaire has not done business overseas? You can't tell me that he did not hire a team of lawyers to figure out all the do's and don'ts before he even whispered a thought of running for president. I'm also positive that Hillary's campaign tried their hardest to find a smoking gun that would have prevented Donald Trump to run for president. They found no such thing. Could you imagine how much stuff President Trump could have got done already if he had no resistance from his own country?
I thought it was interesting this morning Bernie Sanders came out and said that Trump didn't win the election. The Democrats lost it, which I can give maybe 51% truth to.
I kind of look at that as the same thing, really.
So, yeah. You know. It was still Trump's president. But Hillary did run a terrible campaign, you know, by being pretty cocky, thinking that there was no way Donald Trump could win until November 8th.
Well, she paid attention to
midnight.
She paid attention to
the polls.
The poll results.
Yeah.
And the poll results obviously had a margin of error.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick of Caldwell says, morning, guys. Sad to hear about Pence's cat.
Oh, that was a sad story.
Yeah, and the vice president's cat, Oreo, who was black and white, that's why they called him Oreo, died, I think, on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I'm just waiting for, and he mentions Rich, our regular caller, I'm just waiting for Rich to call and tell us how Pence was thinking about getting out of line. So Trump called Vlad, who had the Spetsnaz feed Oreo a polonium-laced can of tuna. Now, he's not really into those kinds of...
I don't think he really does that, yeah.
No, he doesn't come up with just weird stuff off the top of his head.
Yeah.
And any tweets of support by Trump are just a cover to mask his involvement. A special prosecutor should be appointed to get to the bottom of Trump's role in the death of Oreo. Remember, the nature of the evidence is irrelevant. It's the seriousness of the charge that matters, according to Tom Foley. No. I'm just going to go with no.
Let's just keep going with no on that.
So... let me ask you a question.
Sure.
This is something I just happened to think of that came up over the weekend. Puerto Rico voted, and this was a non-binding vote. It didn't really have anything to do. It was just basically a vote to see what the people of Puerto Rico wanted to do.
Yes.
And although maybe 28-29% of the people in Puerto Rico, by the way, Puerto Rico is not its own country. It's part of the United States. It's a U.S. territory.
Yes.
Some people don't know that. Most people, I think, do. But Puerto Rico voted on whether or not they should become a U.S. state or whether or not they would like to. And the yes votes won. Okay, so that brings this to mind. Should we add states to the United States? Now, there are people who will simply say no because they like that big old round number 50.
Sure.
And then there are other people who say, you know, no, because if we add places like Puerto Rico and things like that, that, you know, all of a sudden... you know, they'll be doing nothing but receiving benefits. Well, they already are. They're already a U.S. territory.
Yeah, we're already taking care of many of them.
The problem that Puerto Rico has right now is that they technically, if you're born in Puerto Rico, you are a U.S. citizen, but they don't get to vote for the president. They don't get to vote for, you know, Congress, anything like that.
Yeah, they don't have any representation.
They can elect a congressman and he can go and watch, but that's about all he can do, or he or she, you know.
I thought it was interesting that 97% of the votes in the non-binding referendum favored statehood, an increase over the results of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So they really, really want to become a state.
Yeah. And this could have happened. That's one of the things that could have happened, you know, more than 100 years ago. Puerto Rico could have become a state. Cuba, there was a time when they could have become a state. U.S. Virgin Islands, you know, Guam. There are all sorts of places that still could become U.S. states. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. Probably they won't.
Yes.
Because, you know, I mean, we haven't added a state since, you know, Alaska and Hawaii in 1959, which was, you know, 58 years ago.
Yeah.
So.
Article from CNN.
The chances are we're not going to anytime soon.
Sure. It was a small turnout, so my 97% doesn't mean everybody in Puerto Rico voted.
Well, what it means is that the people who want to become a state actually went and voted.
Yes.
And the people who don't just didn't even worry about it.
This article from CNN says some Puerto Ricans are raring to cozy up with America to jumpstart a flagging economy. Some residents would just as soon maintain the status quo, and others would prefer to break ties altogether.
And there are Puerto Rican nationalists, Puerto Rican nationalists are the people who say, you know what, we don't need the United States to be a nation. We can be a nation by ourselves, and so let's just do that the way we were, you know, long before the,
sure.
the U.S. took over.
To answer your question, I don't think I like the idea.
Okay.
And it has nothing to do with the great round number of 50 or any of that stuff. It's worked up to this point. Again, they can't vote in elections and everything, but it's worked up to this point.
Now, let me ask you this. Now, obviously, adding Alaska, which used to be basically Russian North America,
mm-hmm.
and Hawaii, which was its own kingdom at one time, adding those two seems to have worked 58 years later.
Sure.
There are plenty of people who were not for those because they weren't contiguous. They weren't part of the contiguous United States.
Yes.
You know, in other words, if you want to add more, if you want to add more states, then just, you know, add ones that are already hooked to the other states, which, you know, we didn't apparently find necessary with Alaska and with Hawaii.
Yes. I get that, but I don't really think it has anything to do with the contiguous United States or any of that.
Okay.
I just think the system is working for the most part. Again, mm-hmm. I know they can't vote for president and they don't have any representation. And,
right.
But I don't know how much of what the president and or Congress does affects them in a negative manner. I would have to do more history. I'll mm-hmm. be honest. I don't know.
You know, you mean any more than what Congress does affects everybody?
To affect everybody. That's what I mean. I guess that's what I mean. Yeah. I don't know that they single out Puerto Rico to say, well, we're going to give all 50 states, all the real states are going to get this much money. Puerto Rico, you get nothing. You know, I don't know that they're treated like a stepchild. And I guess what it comes down to for me is what's the benefit to the United States to make them a state?
Honestly, I don't know what the benefit would be.
Yeah.
It feels like the benefit would be more toward Puerto Rico. But then again, like I said, there are Puerto Rican nationalists who would.
Sure.
Who would, you know, rather do anything but become part of the United States. I mean,
oh, 100% agree.
Become an actual U.S. state.
Yes. Yeah. They even hate the fact that they're a Commonwealth.
Yeah.
They would like to cut ties altogether.
And they do have their own Olympic team.
Yes, they do. Yeah. This seems like a one-sided affair that would help out Puerto Rico more than it helps us. And I'm a big fan lately of. It doesn't have
However,
to be lopsided on our side.
But it's like
side.
You said, I mean, there's since they are a U.S. territory, the people born there are U.S. citizens. It's considered U.S. soil.
Sure.
It's just not a state.
Just not a state. And so, like I say, without doing a little more research, I don't know what we gain by that. Since a lot of the stuff that already is happening is already part of the United States. Like you say, they become a citizen. They do have representation. They don't get to vote on anything, but they do have somebody at least looking out for them and being able to lobby for Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
They can't vote for president, but most of the people in this country don't vote. So what do I need more people not voting for president?
Well, that's a good point as well.
Yeah. All right. 9:26. News with Rick Worthington is next on 670 KBOI.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 10, listen to Rush on 670 KBOI.
Welcome back to the show, 9:37. If you're looking for family fun entertainment, it's time for the 2017 Emmett Cherry Festival, June 14th through the 17th in the Emmett City Park. Festival has daily entertainment and nightly concerts, a parade for the big kids, and a little kids parade too. Free entry to all contests and admission is free.
That's cute though. They really get into it.
They do. They love it out there. Go to EmmettCherryFestival.com. Get all the information. Take the kiddos. Take the whole family. You guys will have a great time. The weather's going to be perfect for that this week.
All righty.
Here. I got this update. This stunned me. Where did it go? Do your thing while I'm fine.
Well, I was going to say,
I'm lost.
You're too stunned to even locate.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you this question. Do you think the president actually has tapes of conversations that he's had in the Oval Office?
I do not.
Well, I'm just kind of wondering, you know, what's his end game here on saying that he might? And somebody asked him the other day, you know, obviously during that press conference that he had in the Rose
Yes.
Garden, somebody asked him, do you have tapes? And he says, well, I'm not going to reveal whether I do or not. I'll reveal that soon enough. And then he told them that the answer was going to disappoint them. And I thought to myself, okay, what does that mean exactly?
Well, the answer would be no, then.
Would we be more excited that he did have tapes or didn't have tapes?
For me, as somebody who has said on this show before time and time again that I don't trust anybody in Washington, I would hope and wish that he had tapes. Then he could play them and I could go, Now, at least I know what was literally said in the meeting.
Now, several Republicans, it's turning out, and I've said there are gradually some Republicans that I don't think they are necessarily jumping off the president's bandwagon in such a way to, you know, to break an ankle. But they're at least maybe walking beside it now rather than riding up on top. And one of those is Lindsey Graham. And I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. I said Lindsey Graham, I think, started to hedge his bets because he started to say things in a way that indicated that he wasn't necessarily on the president's team, but, you know, that he was still a Republican. And just this weekend, he told the president that, you know, perhaps you should stop tweeting, not because people don't need to know what you're thinking, but because you need to run it past some advisors and stuff and possibly some lawyers and then let people know what you're thinking. I don't know. I mean, it's like we said, Trump doesn't do things the way other presidents have done.
No.
But he said,
and that's both good and bad.
Yeah. It says fellow Republicans pressed President Trump on Sunday to come clean about whether he has tapes of private conversations with former FBI Director James Comey. It was a sign of escalating fallout from riveting testimony from Comey last week. Well, riveting.
That's
might be stretching
it
a bit.
Not the right word.
I mean, a lot of people watched it on television, but I don't know how many people thought it was riveting.
I did find it interesting, but not riveting.
Of undue pressure from the president. And Attorney General Jeff Sessions, as you pointed out this morning, will be questioned by senators on the Senate Intelligence Committee tomorrow. Here is a question, I think, that let's assume the tapes do exist. Would you release them if you were the president?
If they proved my, and I'm using air quotes for those of you who can't see me, if they proved my innocence, I would release them in a second.
Okay.
Because if they showed that all the stuff that I'd been saying that I said to Comey was what I said,
well, and
his perception of what happened and that he wrote down.
That would probably be a big help.
Was completely different. Yes.
For the president.
Yes.
Because, I mean, you know, there are people that just assume that he is lying all the time, and I think a situation like that where he actually had tapes where somebody else got it wrong and he got it right, that would, you know, I think his approval rating would actually go up, but I fear that he perhaps does not have these tapes.
I don't think so either, and it's the same thing I said
because
last Thursday.
He didn't really ever say he did. He said that Comey better hope there aren't tapes of this conversation, which, according to Comey, is what led him to release his notes and stuff about what the president said to him in the first place.
And to say, Lordy, I hope there's tapes.
Yeah, and he even later apologized for saying Lordy.
Yeah, I guess that's as close to cursing as he can get.
I don't know if that's a swear word or not. I don't think it is.
But it's the same thing last Thursday during that when a couple of questions that he was asked, he said, Comey said, I can't really say that in an open
closed
doors.
Now, there's another question I have. When somebody says that during a Senate hearing, when they're asked a question and they say, I can't answer that question during an open hearing, does that mean yes? Because if it were completely irrelevant, would they just say no?
Well, and it just lends itself to the tinfoil hat conspiracy people to say, well, he's going to say everything behind closed doors that would rip Trump or exonerate him, whichever side you believe in.
Sure.
And he's not going to say that out in public, and it's never going to come out. So that just lends itself to more questions than answers by speaking behind closed doors to the Senate, right?
So it would seem, yeah.
All right. 336-3700, 1-800-529-5264. Let's go to the phone. Scotty in Middleton, you're on 670 KBOI. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, and thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
This is a great program because if it had been me, I'd have spun it out all week. We're talking about Puerto Rico. We're talking about Trump. Let me tell you a couple of things. Trump knew that this guy was a leaker. And this idea about talking about tapes is bluff because he knew himself if this guy went up in front of the committee, they went up in front of, he would have been able to say things that were not true. So Trump bluffed him that he had tapes so that when he came on the committee, he had to watch what he was saying because he thought, you know, if I say this, this guy might come up with that, you know.
Sure.
Well, do you think then, since Comey doesn't actually know whether these tapes exist or not, than he was carefully watching what he said and telling the truth the other day?
Yes.
Hmm.
Because he could have turned around and said, well, he said this and he said that.
Yeah.
Because
as you know, I mean, depending on what side you're on, listening to that testimony, a lot of people said, well, that completely exonerated Trump. And other people said, oh, this is the worst thing to ever happen to him. And I think the point of view seemed to be not on what was said, but whether or not you liked him in the first place.
Well, I really think, as I said, Trump bluffed him. And he didn't know what to say. He had to tell the truth. Because if he didn't, if he'd told a lie and Trump could turn around and say, well, I've got the tapes, he was caught out. And now, as far as Puerto Rico goes, Puerto Rico is in debt for billions, and that's with a B. And I'm sure a lot of people in Costa Rica would like America to take over so that America would inherit the debt. Mm. It's the same with Cuba. Why did Mr. Obama help out Cuba? Well, Cuba has reneged on billions of dollars. They won't pay other countries, and that is why other countries didn't step in and help them out, because they were up to their eyeballs in debt.
Yeah, and as you know, in just the past few days, President Trump has said that he isn't, you know, he isn't quite as keen on Cuba as President Obama was, and that he may, you know, try to renegotiate what we already have going with them.
Boy, it seems kind of weird that they're so close and we don't have anything to do with them. Cuba, that is.
Well, I mean, you know, they had a revolution. They kicked Americans out back in the late 50s. They became a communist country. And do you know how many communist countries there are in the entire world now?
Seven?
No, five.
Oh, okay.
That's it. I mean, I asked somebody
and
the other day.
And we trade with six of them probably, right?
The other day I asked somebody, well, yeah. The other day I asked somebody, you know, how many communist countries do you think there are? And they said, oh, no, no, probably 70 or 80. I said, no, there are five. That's it.
And we trade with four of those.
Yeah. We don't trade with North Korea. That's the only one we don't.
Yeah. So why can't we trade
and
with
the others,
Cuba?
By the way, are China, Vietnam, Laos, and Cuba.
Yeah. It just seems like it could help both countries. I don't know.
So there are four Asian countries and one that basically is you know, an island country off North America.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Scotty. We appreciate it. 9:46, I've got a bombshell from the Cosby trial that just happened this morning. It's 9:46. You're listening to 670 KBOI.
You are listening to Idaho Talks Live on 670 KBOI.
Welcome back to the show. I will share with you that Lauren pays under $2 a gallon for gas in Nashville, Tennessee.
However, right now she's in Hawaii.
Which they're probably paying $4
a
gallon.
About, what, yeah, $4.50 a gallon.
Yeah. I was in Palm Springs last weekend, and it was anywhere from $3.06 to $3.54 a gallon, but that's California.
Are you going to say that every chance you get?
Yep.
Okay. I was in Palm Springs last weekend.
I was in Palm Springs last weekend when it was 170 degrees, well, and I was outside at a wedding.
I wasn't.
You didn't sweat your behind off.
Okay, yeah. That either, right.
Bill Cosby's attorneys, as everyone knows, in Pennsylvania, he's on trial for the rape, drugging and raping of Andrea Constand. Mm-hmm. Bill Cosby's attorneys raced through a startlingly brief 6-minute defense today, bringing to a close testimony in one of the most high-profile criminal cases in recent memory. Cosby and his wife Camille, who made her first appearance in the courthouse this morning, watched as defense attorney Brian McMonagle called a single police witness to confirm the existence of a police report. That detective had led the investigation into allegations brought by Andrea Constand that Cosby drugged and sexually assaulted her 13 years ago at his suburban Philadelphia estate. The brevity of the defense case contrasted with the presentation by prosecutors who called 12 witnesses over 5 days of often emotional testimony. The end of last week, a spokesman for Cosby hinted that the 79-year-old entertainer might testify. Legal experts and courtroom observers dismissed that suggestion as a bluff, perhaps designed to throw the prosecutors off balance at a time when they had momentum. Once both sides returned to the courtroom, Cosby confirmed to the judge, "I'm not going to take the stand." O'Neill assured the 79-year-old entertainer that he would instruct the jury that defendants are not required to testify. The case will now go to closing arguments, and the jury could begin deliberations as early as this afternoon. The judge at one point addressed Cosby to ask him a few standard questions. When asked if he understood what was happening, Cosby said yes in a booming voice. My question for you is, if you were on trial for something, I don't even care what it is, murder.
Would I be happy?
Rape.
Yeah.
Robbery.
Right.
Pick your horrible thing and you're on trial, but you didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know you didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a preponderance of circumstantial or emotional testimony that can kind of paint you in a corner.
Mm-hmm.
And the one way you can get out of that corner is to testify. But again, it's a double-edged sword because you can be ridiculous and say something on the stand that would doom you also. Would you testify if you knew in your heart you were 100% innocent of what you were being
charged
with?
I would more than likely take the advice of my attorney. Because they've been in more courtrooms than I have.
I understand, but at the end of the day, the attorney's not going to have to do your time if you're convicted. And that's my problem.
Okay, that is a good point. Now, how long did you say the entire defense lasted before they rested?
6 minutes.
6 minutes. I don't think I would be terribly happy with that.
Maybe there's something in between. Maybe that's the thing that's bugging me about this, is that if Bill's sitting there and he's thinking, well, I didn't do any of this stuff, there was, you know, there was nothing that she didn't agree
to,
or whatever.
And you have to
6 minutes, that's it?
In this country, you do have to be proven guilty, not proven innocent.
Yes.
And so if the defense honestly feels that the prosecution, or, you know, that the other side anyway, in this case, did not prove their case, then, you know, they probably don't have much more obligation than to say, no, he didn't, and you clearly did not prove he did, and there is a reasonable doubt, so you're going to have to say no here.
Yeah, that's tough.
However, I think I'd want longer than 6 minutes.
I think I'd like, maybe, my point.
It should at least last as long as they did on Boston Legal or something.
Or it should go double digits at least, right?
Perry Mason or Matt Locke or whatever, you know.
This is from The Hill, and something we just talked about. Mm-hmm. Attorney General Jeff Sessions will appear before the Senate Intelligence Committee for an open hearing tomorrow.
Oh, he's not. It's not going to be closed.
Nope.
Now, originally, I'd heard it was going to be a closed hearing.
I did, too. But Sessions requested that the hearing be public.
Oh, OK.
A Justice Department spokesperson said in a statement today.
Which would seem to be a good sign for him.
Yes. The Attorney General has requested that this hearing be public. He believes it is important for the American people to hear the truth directly from him and looks forward to answering the committee's questions tomorrow. Is it the same group of eight?
I don't know whether that's a strategy, but that sounds like somebody who, is not planning to conceal anything.
Or maybe drop any bombs. I don't know.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. So that'll be tomorrow. You and Paul J., I'm sure we'll talk about that tomorrow.
I'm sure we will.
In the show. Paul J. will be back in the morning. Rush Limbaugh comes up after news at the top of the hour. Then Michael Savage at 1 o'clock. More local great talk with Nate Shellman at 3 on 670 KBOI.